Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. And today we have another one of our Hallmark actors with us today. And we have Daniel Bacon with us. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Daniel.
No problem.
Yeah. So what we like to do with new guests is we like to get a chance to get to know you a little bit. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got inspired to get into acting?
Well, there's definitely a story and a journey. I'm originally from England. I was adopted at birth. And then through a series of family things, we ended up moving to Canada when I was about 7. I grew up on Vancouver Island, high school and college, and then moved to Vancouver in 1991. Uh-huh. And soon after I moved to Vancouver, I got into a singing project. I wouldn't dub myself a singer per se, but I could carry a note, and I had some dance background. So I got into this singing project. It was basically a boy band. So it was just after New Kids on the Block had come out, and Boys to Men around that time. And so I was in this singing project for about 2 years, but through the singing project, there was another band at the same label, and one of the women was going to a commercial audition, and she said, "Hey, my agent said, you know, if I know any young guys, to invite them along to this casting." And so the four of us in the boy band all trucked off with her to this audition, and it was for Pringles. Pringles was going to do Cheesies in a can. And so that was what the spot was about. And so we had to go to this room, and I had never done anything like this before. So I didn't really know what, how it worked, but danced around in a room, you know, to some conga music. And then about a week later, I got a call from that woman's agent saying, "Hey, you have a callback." And I'm like, not sure what that is. And she goes, "Well, they see a bunch of people and then they bring back a couple people and see them again." I'm like, okay. So I go to this callback, but the callback was very intimidating. Because everybody there seemed like they knew each other. They all had like headshots and resumes. And I was like, what is this? And so same thing, went into a room, except there was about 8 people behind a desk in Gap outfits. They all had the same gray t-shirt and same khakis on. And I was like, this is really bizarre. But again, had to dance around. And lo and behold, a few days later, I got a call that I booked the commercial. And so I was like, oh, I guess I'm one for one in this auditioning business.
You're like,
this is easy. It's easy. So that particular agent said, "Hey, you know, if you're interested, I can send you out on some more commercial auditions." And I'm like, sure, why not? What have I got to lose? So I ended up booking 2 more in about the next 3 months. By the third one, I went, you know what? This is kind of fun. Like, I like this. So I had a new friend who was an actor. And I said, "Hey, I like this acting thing. Like, do you have any advice for me?" And they suggested to go into an acting class. And I'm like, okay. So scoured around the city, found one that, you know, seemed like an interesting fit. So I went down, and my first night, about 15 minutes in, I was like, okay, this is definitely something that I like and I'm very interested by. So I took a part-time class for about a year. And at the end of the year, I was like, okay, I like this. This is something I think I want to pursue. But I was 25, and I'm like, I kind of want to finish my degree. I was 2 years away from finishing my degree to be a teacher, actually, a phys ed history teacher. So I moved back to Victoria to go finish my degree. And when I was over there, I just had this moment of like, I am not doing, going on the path I want to go on. I'm going what I feel I should do rather than what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And about 3 weeks later, I was back in Vancouver. I had signed up for theater school. And that started the journey. I went to theater school, got out, got an agent. I've been plugging away for 25 years. So I kind of fell backwards into acting. It wasn't something as a kid that I was, you know, I wasn't this drama kid or, you know, making movies or anything like that. It was definitely something that I fell into in my 20s. But looking back and reflecting on it, I feel like I never really had one thing that I was passionate about. I was passionate about like a dozen things. And so acting really sated that desire to do a whole bunch of things and a whole bunch of jobs. And now I've been teaching for the past 16 years. So it all came full circle as I was able to actually teach, which is what I originally wanted to do out of high school. So, yeah.
That's great. So what did your family think? Like all of a sudden you're this actor.
It's a bit of a bumpy road. My mom is sort of a traditional single mom, and you know, with five kids, and she was very much the traditional trajectory of like, you know, you got to get a good job. I did fairly decently in school academically, so she always thought I could have become like a lawyer or something, you know, like sort of more what's, you know, deemed higher placement and stability. So when I originally, when I'm going to acting school, she didn't fully jump on board with excitement at first, but parents have a weird way of shifting their opinion when they see their kid on TV. So the first time she saw me on TV, she's like, oh, okay.
That's fun. Yeah. Do you remember your first role on film
from
the commercials?
I sure do. It was a very strange one. That's why.
Yeah.
It was on the show Millennium, which was a sort of a, I wouldn't say a sister, but it was the same creative team as that was behind the X-Files. And so my role was paramedic, and it was a scene with Lance Henriksen of Aliens fame.
Yeah.
And I had three lines, and it was, I'm reading a body temperature of 98 degrees. This guy's been out here way too long. He's in a lot of trouble. And I remember because in the audition, my note from the director was that I was caring too much and to constantly not care as much, which to me at the time felt very odd to not care.
Yeah.
But so I had to do it like six times. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's these three lines and I'm just not getting it. And what a terrible experience. And then I got it.
Yeah.
And so I got it and we were filming out by the airport in Vancouver late night, and a generator broke. So I was very anxious when I arrived to set, my first job, you know, ready to go. And then I had to wait for about 8 hours while they got the generator fixed. So by the time I was ready to go, I was like 2 a.m. I'm exhausted. You know, just I was so tired. I wasn't able to be nervous anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we did the scene, you know, it went fine. I enjoyed it. It was fun. The director did a great job. And then about a week or two later, we got a call that the production said they had to dub my voice. Like they had to add her a bunch of CB chatter and all this other sound effects.
Yeah.
In the post-production, they just didn't have time to bring me in to dub these three lines. So they had to dub me, but they must've dubbed me with somebody that was about, you know, 6'9", you know, like a linebacker or something, because the voice was so deep and so full compared to me. So you have this little me, you know, back then I was like no beard, just diminutive little paramedic guy, but this booming James Earl Jones voice came over and I was like,
that's funny.
Yeah. So I made the cut. I was still there. It was me on camera, but it was not my voice.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Why did they just ADR it?
I don't know, like, to be honest. Like,
that seems like more work to get like a different actor.
Yeah. I mean, it was like years later. I'm like, yeah, this is very strange that they did that. And like, it's me. So it's not like my performance is off. Like it's still my face and me doing the acting. So I was very, very puzzled by that.
That's very funny.
Ho, ho, ho. We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Patreon.
Do you love Hallmarkies podcasts, especially at Christmas?
Do you enjoy the holiday previews, recaps, interviews, and bonus episodes?
If the answer is yes, please consider supporting the Hallmarkies Patreon. We need your help to do what we do both during the Christmas season and all year round.
But not only do you help a podcast led by strong, independent women by becoming a Patreon, you get to become a part of the Hallmarkies family.
Starting at only $2 a month as a patron, you will have access to our Facebook Patreon group where we talk about the movies, shows, and more all year.
We also have many monthly patron watch-alongs with guests like Lacey Chabert, Natalie Hall, Paul Campbell, Mary Lou Henner, and more, giving their behind-the-scenes details of their films.
As a patron, you also have the chance to provide input into the podcast and even join us at different tiers.
So this Christmas season, spread some cheer to the Hallmarkies Patreon and become a member today. You won't regret it.
Go to patreon.com/Hallmarkies to learn more.
That's patreon.com/Hallmarkies.
It's kind of interesting, your first role with playing a doctor, because I noticed that you've played doctors a lot.
Yes.
In your acting.
Well, in my Bachelor of Phys Ed, I had to do a couple years of post-secondary sciences. So like physiology and anatomy and all these science courses. So the language associated with doctor roles, I have somewhat of a proficiency of being able to lift it off the page. And one of the casting directors after one of my auditions, where I had to do a lot of techno jargon, said, you're really good at sounding smart. And I went,
you're like, okay,
is that a compliment? So I'm sort of able to take the. I actually just recently did a role on The Good Doctor, where I had to play a medical professional on the stand. And I remember when I got the audition, that I'm like, oh, it's one of those ones where I want to get on The Good Doctor before, you know, because I've never been on it. But if I get this role, it's going to be a real challenge because it was all techno medical jargon. That, yeah. You know, and to have to say that over and over and over and over again, you know, is kind of a actor's nightmare. But I powered through it. So
That's good. That's good. Yes. I noticed that you've done a little bit of everything. What would you say as an actor is the main difference between doing like episodic television, movies of the week, and like feature films?
What's the biggest difference? Well, I find with feature films, I'll start there, it's a little bit more time. Whereas, you know, with feature films, especially ones that were theatrically released, the way they can shoot the film is that you've got 100 strangers in a dark room with their entire focus at the screen. So you've got them. So you can take more time and draw things out and really let things simmer and boil. Whereas TV, you've got the clicker in your hand. You've got your phone in your hand. You know what I mean? Like, so TV is a little bit more fast paced, a little bit more quick cuts. So because you want to be able to grab the audience and have them not change the channel. Mm-hmm. So when you go to film those two different things, TV is definitely a lot of pace. Like we got to go, pick it up. Whereas the feature films, I find you can take your time a little bit more and you know, you do like multiple takes. TV, you maybe, you know, do 2 or 3, 4 takes. Whereas on a film, feature film, you might do 15 to 20 takes of a particular scene. So a little bit more exploration with the feature film, I find. TV, you just got to be ready to go. Like you've got to be ready to adjust on the fly and, you know, and not get too caught up in your head and really trust the work that you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing an episode on one of my other podcasts on the movie Enchanted. And they said that they spent 18 days shooting the big musical sequence, which is about 5 minutes of film. Yeah. And it just made me laugh because I'm like, watch these other films that I cover, you know, the TV movies are that less. They're lucky if they get 15 days for the whole movie.
The whole movie. And that's the thing, especially like with the way, you know, media is consumed now, whereas you can watch it on your on your phone. You can, you know, watch it on your iPad. And with the streamers, you know, you've taken commercials out. Whereas previously, you know, a lot of shows were filmed and edited to fit the commercials. So if it's an hour long show, you've got 45 minutes. That's it. You know, you've got to fit this whole narrative in 45 minutes. With streamers now, some episodes are 55, some episodes are 58, some are 51, depending on, you know, what that storyline is. So as actors, we have to just simply adapt. And it's kind of cool because with technology, with digital, you've got a little bit more flexibility in that, you know, they can just keep recording on TV now, whereas film was expensive. And so, you know, when you're filming on celluloid, like you weren't really in a place to do multiple takes on TV shows, whereas now you do have a little bit more freedom to just let the camera roll and do take after take after take, and you can pick and choose what you want. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you have done a ton of these Hallmark movies of the week.
Yeah. Over 30. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm just curious, do you like doing the mystery shows or the Christmas movies or the like regular rom-coms? Do you have any preference or do you?
Well, Rachel, you kind of hit it in that I do a little bit of everything. So I feel very fortunate to have such a wide array of films that I've got to do. I think what changes is the people, like, you know, depending on who the leads are, or who the director are, changes the experience for me. So as I'm not the you know, not often the face on the poster, I don't have that added pressure, you know, having to be there every day. So I can come in for my one day, my 5 days, my 7 days, and really have a lot of fun. And so, you know, once you meet the leads and you see what sort of rapport you have with them and see what they're setting the tone, because often the leads will set the tone for the project. So I find like that sways more my experience rather than the rom-coms versus the mysteries. It's like, who are the leads? Mm-hmm. And you know, like, do I have a good rapport with them? Do we have a good chemistry and can we have fun? Yeah. I've worked with Chris Palaha a couple of times and I get along really well with him. So, mm-hmm. you know, having a chance to do multiple with him was really fun.
He's so nice.
He's so nice. And Eric Mabius is somebody I had a really great experience with filming with him. I honestly have been very fortunate in my acting journey and that I don't have a lot of horror stories. I have, mm-hmm. for the most part, I've been really blessed to work with really wonderful people and have really fantastic experiences. So,
good.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to play the murderer in one of these mysteries?
No.
Oh.
I'm more the guy that solves the mystery. If anything, you know, like you said, the science guy or, you know, the medic or the coroner or, you know, that helps to solve the mystery. I play mayors a lot too.
Actually, I had that in my notes also.
Yeah. I was a president of student council when I was in high school. So having to stand up in front of people and deliver, you know, speeches and so forth at assemblies, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't realize it was prepping me for my, you know, lifelong career of being, you know, a mayor.
Yeah, the mayor's trying to shut down the festivals, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So you were on BFG working with Steven Spielberg. That's amazing.
That was pretty surreal. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of those. Oddly enough, it actually altered a journey of Hallmark journey for myself in that I had done the first Aurora Tea Garden movie and was slated to do the second one and as part of the book club with
Candace. The murders
yes
club.
So I was you know, oh, contacted, yep, you're in the second one, you know, the same crew is going to be there. And then I just after that I booked the BFG and it was a 3-month shoot. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the giants, so we're in the gray suits, you know, with the little ball dots and the head cam and everything. And what Stephen wanted to do is it was basically like a Wizard of Oz, where mm-hmm. he wanted the giants to have human form in Ruby's life prior to her going to with the BFG to the giant land. And so I got added a day as my human self. And so when they added, it was 3 days actually. And those 3 days conflicted directly with mm-hmm. the days of Aurora Tea Garden. And at the time you're like, well, I have a 3-month job on a Disney film with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
I don't think I can say no to that one. So unfortunately, they weren't able to make the schedules work for Aurora. And it's like at the time, you're like, oh, it's just, you know, it's a second movie. I didn't know they were going to do like 17 of them, right, whatever they ended up doing.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. A brighter future awaits if she can escape the shadows of the past. In After the Shadows by Amanda Cabot, the first book in the Secrets of Sweetwater Crossing series, a young widow returns to her hometown in Texas Hill Country, never dreaming that the new school teacher holds the key both to the mystery surrounding her father's death and to her heart. Library Journal says her sensitivity and realistic portrayal of characters often on the margins of history really shine in this new historical series. Check out After the Shadows today at bakerbookhouse.com and get 30% off and free U.S. shipping. That's 30% off and free U.S. shipping at bakerbookhouse.com, or you can use our affiliate link in the description.
So, you know, it was a little bittersweet to start, but he was like a cool uncle, you know, like it was, I mean, I had no illusions that the movie's going to be about, you know, the main giant and Ruby and mm-hmm. Ruby Barnhill's character. And so, you know, it was predominantly about them, but it was just a cool experience, like to just go and to meet Steven and to meet Jemaine Clement and Bill Hader mm-hmm. and Mark Rylance.
Yeah.
And
were you one of the mean giants?
Yes.
Yes.
My giant kind of looks like me. I'm flesh bone cruncher. And so my giant is bald and, you know, well tanned and has an apron on. So, you know, it was the whole experience from sitting in the chair to have the dots, you know, and get all your mm-hmm. facial expressions logged into a computer to going into this big, empty, cavernous volume, which they called it, with nothing. It was just, you know, nine guys in gray suits sort of clomping around being
this is like a green screen room.
It's not even a green screen room. It's just this giant open, like massive. If you can imagine like a warehouse that's been converted, it's just empty. And then it's got a rigging around the ceiling with all these cameras. It must have been about 50 cameras on this rigging. And so you're inside and you get logged into a computer. So you make a series of motions, logged into the computer. And then when you move in the volume, the computer now tracks every movement that you make. It was actually a pretty cool experience to see how that technology works. So we were there, like I say, for 3 months. And, you know, I think the best day was when I had to stick my butt in Bill Hader's face, push Mark Rylance over, and then lay on the ground and have Steven Spielberg walk by going, "Hey, nice work, Dan." Steven Spielberg knows my first name. Oh, my gosh. So
like, that's not part of most people's day in the life.
No, you know what I mean? No. And I mean, in the end, we got to go to the premiere in Hollywood, which was always like sort of a lifelong dream of mine to do the red carpet on, you know, so we went down Hollywood Boulevard and stood in front of the bank of cameras. Cool. And yeah, so it was a really neat experience to have.
When you do special effects, especially as immersive as that, do they give you some idea of kind of what it's going to look like or what?
So yeah, they kind of have a storyboard similar to what they would do for cartoons, isn't that they have like a little animation sequences where they would show you, you know, what the surrounding area, so like the grassy field or the cave or whatever you were in, and then, you know, as you shot, they could render that in the background so you could move around and see eventually what it's going to start to look like. So you had some sense. It was a long process, so you know, it was sort of like rehearse, and then shoot for one day. Rehearse, and then shoot for one day. Because they're motion capture, they could, it's, you know, you can just keep rolling, you know, and then they're going to stitch and cut and put it together afterwards in the editing room.
Were you familiar with the book? Did you know?
I knew Roald Dahl, but I had not read the book. I read the book. So when I got the audition, you know, all it sort of said at first was giants. And I'm like, giants? Why am I going for an audition that's giants? And then as I read more, they wanted people who had movement background or animal work, which is something I had done in theater school. Uh-huh. And then I saw his name and I'm like, oh gosh.
Yeah. Steven Spielberg. Whatever I have to do.
Okay. Yeah. So
sign me up.
Sign me up. So I got the audition on a Friday and I basically took the weekend. I read the book. I watched, there was an animated film that they had done a few years back. I watched the animated film. I watched a ton of motion capture stuff from Lord of the Rings and from Jack and the Giant Slayer. Like, I threw myself into preparing. And so we had a scene that we had prepared that we had to learn the lines. And then we had to create our own scene with our own giant, basically using our own inspiration. And so I did a really interesting, you know, giant. It was based on Bill Murray's Hercules from old Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
So that's what I basically based it on and did that. And I guess they liked it. We only had one audition on tape. Nice. And about 2 months later, I found out that I booked one of the giants. So,
oh my gosh, you must have been so excited.
You know what's funny is I had done a Marvel cartoon series a couple years before. Uh-huh. And I was told, you know, Marvel is notorious that if they're not feeling that the vibe is working, they do replace actors. And so I was like, oh gosh, this is my first voiceover job. And it's, you know, I played the role of War Machine. So basically Iron Man's best friend. Right. And so I went in first day ready to go. And we banged out our first day of recording. We came back the second day and they'd recast Iron Man. So after the first day, something was not grooving with whatever Iron Man was doing. And so they replaced him. So I was like, oh gosh, if they replaced like the top guy, you know, so I tried to not let it, you know, spook me and just tried to come in and do my work every day. And then, you know, two seasons later, okay, we're doing okay. So with the BFG, that first couple of weeks, I was like, okay, you know, they're not seeing my actual face. So I got to mind my P's and Q's here and make sure that I'm ready to go. I'm prepared. I'm ready to listen to direction, take the direction and all that thing. Cause I definitely didn't relax until about a month in, you know, after about a month, I was okay. We seem to be the core. There's been good feedback. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I can relax now. So once I hit that mark, it definitely, you know, became a lot more fun. And it was kind of like going to work. We're like a little weird ensemble of oddballs, you know, these giants, because we were all different shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. That were similar to, you know, our characters. There was one very tall, lean gentleman, one sort of heavyset gentleman, a couple shorter guys. So, you know, we're a real mixed bag of mm-hmm. oddballs. Yeah.
Yeah. So you, like we said, you've done a ton of these movies of the week. And you said that, you know, who you're working with, it makes the biggest difference. But overall, what's your favorite part about working on these TV movies? And why do you think that they have become such a phenomenon?
I've talked with a lot of people because for a while in Vancouver, there was definitely this sense of like, oh, the Hallmark movies, you know, they had this mm-hmm. sort of quotation marks. And I think that what a lot of the, you know, the actors, you know, felt that it was a little too sweet and saccharine-y at times, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like it was a little, people felt it was formulaic and whatever. And I always said, you know what? It's work. It's an opportunity yeah. to go to set. It's an opportunity to collaborate. It's an opportunity to hit marks and, you know, and earn a living at the same time.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And so I always try to not fall into that trap of ever judging the work. And I watched a lot of Little House on the Prairie as a kid. And so I felt like the Hallmark films took that slot that Little House on the Prairie filled, where you can watch it on a Saturday night or a Sunday night and the whole family could watch it. Like the grandkids could watch it up to grandparents. And so I think that it's got a universality that way. And I think, you know, some of the changes they made is definitely having a little bit more interesting storylines, a little bit more diverse casts and so forth. So that's helped too, I think. I think mm-hmm. it's shifted in the last few years. And I found like, even like some like, whoa, somebody got murdered, you know, but it got a little bit more serious that time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there was a fight and it was like, oh, that had a little bit of heat behind it, the two characters fighting. So I just think that, you know, they know what they're doing. They've done so many of them that I always find it to be a really pleasurable experience every time I've been on one. So,
well, especially because Hollywood just stopped making rom-coms for so long.
Yeah.
And so where else were you going to turn? The Hallmark Channel.
Yeah.
That's where you right? had to go.
And it's, you know, sometimes you just want to be entertained for an hour and a half. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the other thing they stopped making in theaters is, you know, sort of the edgier comedies, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like in an effort to be more PC and more inclusive, I think that they've stifled some of our innate, we all laugh at ourselves. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we need that opportunity to laugh at ourselves. Like the pendulum maybe was a little too far one way and now it's swung a little too far the other way. So I hope that at some point it comes back to a more central viewpoint in terms of.
Well, and I like the new storylines, the little bit of mixture that we have, but I think the formula is also part of the appeal. It's nice to just sit down and know exactly where you're going to get and then get it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we all love, you know, just sometimes to not have to think too much, just to sit back and enjoy a fun hour and a half, you know, escape from whatever, you know, life is sort of throwing at us. And again, I think the leads have a big, hand in that, you know what I mean? And developing followings and
the chemistry
and the chemistry. And often that's what I love. I love coming in. They're like, okay, let's have fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's not get too serious, but let's make it real. Let's, you know, take it seriously but also have fun in the process.
I think in Nantucket Noel, you were playing an actor. right? The one with Sarah Powers.
Yes, I was an actor, but I was many things in the city. I also had my little shop down on the wharf.
Okay,
but I had to sing, and that's the thing. It's my greatest fear now. I started out as a singer in a boy band, but I don't particularly sing anymore. So the fact that we had to sing in that one was a little stressful on that day.
Yeah. That was, I mean, and Fiona Broom was so funny in that movie.
I've known Fiona for a while, and we've worked together before. So it was really great having to play off her. We had a really funny moment that absolutely dropped the whole crew, but they unfortunately didn't leave it. I just said, we're sort of poking around a Christmas tree, and then Trevor Donovan and Sarah turn around and see us scoping them. Uh-huh. And so we sort of deep back behind the tree. So we'd shot it a few times, and I go, Fiona, push me. Like as hard as you can on this next take. So we pop out and she just goes, oh gosh. And she like shoved me so hard. And we were all laughing, and unfortunately didn't make the final cut. But
I was like, why isn't this movie about this acting troupe? I think they're the more interesting.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Movie.
Absolute blast.
Yeah. Yes. I did write down, you're either the mayor or the doctor.
Yes. I did a Hallmark movie with Debbie Gibson many years ago, and it was just a small, quick role. But the producers were talking and said that I have really kind eyes, and so I'm like, oh, is that what helps me get these Hallmark movies? Is that I have these very approachable, trusting eyes? So that might be part of what has led to my Hallmark journey.
Yeah, I guess they just see you as like the mayor.
Yeah,
meeting everybody.
I wasn't the mayor, but I was the editor of the local newspaper on A Christmas Treasure, which was Jordan Sparks' movie that she did. Uh-huh. And I remember going, when I got the role, I'm like, am I old enough to be Jordan Sparks' dad? Like, I'm like, how old is Jordan? And then when we got to set, and she had said, you were my favorite. You were my choice because you remind me so much of my dad. And it turned out I was like less than a year younger than her actual dad. I was like, oh gosh, you're 31. I could have had a 31-year-old. And then within the script, there was an added thing that all of a sudden, the son, the guy who played my son, found out they were pregnant. So I went, oh my gosh, I went from being a dad to a grandfather. It's like, oh my gosh.
That's funny.
Yeah. And Heather Notley, who actually is in Nantucket Noel playing the woman who owns the cafe, was actually in Christmas Treasure as my daughter-in-law as well. So that was sort of fun to play with her again.
Yeah. Cool. So let's talk about this picture of her.
Yes.
New movie coming out, Tyler and Rhiannon.
Yep.
They seem like a fun pairing.
Yeah. I'd worked with Rhiannon before on another movie as a doctor, oddly enough. So I'd worked with Rhiannon before. And I'd worked with Michael Robeson, the director, a couple of times before, because he had directed Christmas Treasure. And then he had done the V.C. Andrews series. I'd done a role on that. So I'd worked with him a couple of times. And he has a really dry sense of humor that if you don't know him, it can really throw you. But I, having worked with him before, he was great to work with. And so Tyler, I'd never worked with before. So it was really cool to get to meet Tyler. I know he'd done a lot of Hallmark movies, and he was really, really great. And again, like a lead, he was very prepared and just so ready to work. So walking into an environment like that, when you're leads, or you're like, they're the ones driving the bus and they're ready to go, you just have to hop on board, and sort of roll with them. So it was really, I didn't really have a scene with Rhiannon. It was mostly with Tyler, but Tyler was really great to work with.
Yeah, he seems to have a gift for finding chemistry with all of his co-stars. I don't think there's been a single one where it hasn't worked as far as chemistry, which is, he's done a lot now at this point. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And he, the scene is such that I'm the editor. So it's mostly me talking for this scene, of pitching him of what we're ready to do with his photos that he's done. And so we came in and I went in it very real, very grounded, very real. So we did the first rehearsal and he goes, is that what you're going to do? He's like, that's awesome. Great. Yeah, this is great. really nice. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like whenever you have a director or a lead that could just put you at ease like that by just being approachable, open, and collaborative, it just makes the whole shooting experience that much more pleasurable, you know, just to know mm-hmm. that you're not walking on eggshells. You don't have to sort of dance around an ego or anything like that. Like we're here to make a movie and, you know, let's have fun while we do it. So.
And she's like researching a photo that he took or something like that, right?
Essentially, there's a photo he takes that wasn't supposed to be part of a package that he delivers to the magazine. And so the woman that basically works under me is going through this package and finds this picture of Rhiannon. And so she goes ahead and they print it without him really knowing that that photo was part of the package. And so all of a sudden this picture gets out, but he of course didn't have really her permission or anything. She didn't know that he was taking the photo. So it sets off sort of this chain reaction of then how do we go about, you know, resolving this problem? So.
Well, we kind of tease sometimes that Hallmark loves nothing more than a photographer. There's so many, if they want to give somebody a creative story, you know, like be a creative character, almost like 90% of the time it'll be a photographer.
Well, I think too,
this time it's the guy that's the photographer,
yeah,
which is a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think that I don't know for sure, I think Tyler was a producer on it, or he had some involvement in that regard on the movie. I've had the chance, another Hallmark actor that's starting to really get a lot of films is Ben Ayers. Ben, he was in You Me and a Christmas Tree as with Danica McKellar. But so he is somebody I've known for a long time. His brother was actually best man at my wedding. I've known Ben for a long time. So it's really great to see, you know, him, you know, doing so well within the Hallmark universe. And mm-hmm. I know he's got some sort of Hallmark swag that he's been doing, or.
Yeah. This romance university thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, so that seems.
Yeah. Getting this for charity. What it is, but yeah. So that's interesting. And yeah, he's done some really good ones. A couple with Nikki DeLoach.
Yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarky in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anne of Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
Very cool. We're looking forward to the movie. And it's always fun when we are able to get character actors like yourself on and talk to, that we see so many times in these movies that it's like, oh. Put a story behind the face, you know.
Yes,
nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I like I say, I'm always feel very fortunate to have done as many as I have. You know, mm-hmm. It's like you just kind of plug away as an actor, and it's not until someone says, "Hey, you've done quite a few Hallmark movies." I'm like, yeah. I guess I have, haven't I? You know, you just sort of, you know, that's the role. You go in, you do your job, and then you head home. And it, I feel like with these movies, being a character actor, it's like being the guy at the end of the bench on a basketball team. Do you know what I mean? You're not Michael Jordan. You're not relied upon to go out, you know, and carry the team. But when you're called upon to go into the game, you've got to make sure you hit that shot or you hit that free throw. You can't just slough off. You've got to be able to deliver. And so I find that to be a unique challenge in itself. To maybe you're not going to be there for 14 days. You're only there for 3 days. But in those 3 days, you've got to make it seem like you are part of that. That they're putting together, you know, that so.
Well, and it's got to be fun too to have a job where every day is different.
Absolutely.
You have different roles, different sets, different, especially with you doing so much variety in different projects. And that's, it's just got to be fun.
I resisted for a long time that I'm a character actor. I'm like, I'm not a character. I don't play character. I don't do voices and do wacky stuff. But this year already, you know, I went from a medical expert on The Good Doctor to the proprietor of a nautical themed tavern on A Million Little Things to a creepy coroner on a new Nicolas Cage movie, you know, all within 2 weeks. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I do run the full gamut of characters here.
You're like, I do lots of different kinds of mayors and doctors.
You know, it's it. Yeah. Mayors, doctors, and now apparently grandpas. So I'm not sure I was ready to make that transition into grandpas, but.
Well, yeah. So there's this new series, The Way Home, on Hallmark, and it's, they go back in time to 1999.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that was when I was a freshman in college. Like, I'm not ready for that to be like the nostalgic period that they're going back to.
Exactly.
It's like, wow. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. Well, we have some fun get to know you questions at the end of the room. So the first question is, what is the best ice cream flavor?
Salted caramel gelato.
Sounds good.
No hesitation. It's my honestly my favorite flavor. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Good. That sounds good. All right. What is your favorite color?
Blue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What music are you into right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have two small kids, so they're transitioning out of kids' music into more modern pop music. So they love, you know, the new Miley Cyrus song. They like that song. I tend to listen to, I was a DJ for 10 years. So I listen to a lot of different music. I said to my son the other day, I don't love the question favorite because I really love a lot of different music. I tend to listen to alt pop more than anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll listen, I don't really listen to a lot of ton of modern, you know, top 40 stuff. It's not really where I sit. But I listen to a lot of oldies. I love disco. I love jazz. Like, so I have a real mix on my Spotify playlist that I listen to.
Well, your kids might have fun with the Turning Red soundtrack, you know, the boy band.
Yes. Yes. They love. I mean, that's the thing with the streamers. They've literally watched like every Disney Plus movie now. And, you know, so I'm trying to move them on to more live action stuff and at odds with my wife sometimes is about, oh, are they old enough for that one yet? I don't know. So,
yeah, like no big surprise that Encanto is still in one of the most watched programs on streaming. It's like, yeah, it's all these kids watching it over and over and over
and over and over again. Yeah.
Yes. All right. What is your go-to date night food?
Sushi.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What is your go-to date night activity if you're going to go do something?
Oh, do we hit date nights? Yeah, we don't have a lot. Neither of us have parents that live in our town. They both live out of the city. When we do a date night, we like to just actually spend time together. Yeah. As knows that corny as that sounds, but between the two of us working and with the kids with their activities, it's we don't get a lot of time to just sit and hang out with each other and appreciate each other's company. My wife works for the Fairmont hotel chain, so if we often will do like a date night, will be we go into the city and do a staycation. So we'll stay at one of the Fairmont hotels. And that is our date night is we do a night in the city. We live out in the burbs. So we like to go into the city and do a night at the hotel.
Oh, that sounds nice. I love hotels.
Yes.
Yeah. So fun.
It's great perk.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Which do you like better, dogs or cats?
Dogs. I'm allergic to cats.
Yeah, me too. Make me sneeze.
Yeah. Where's my dog? My dog came down. So we have a little schnoodle doggy.
Aww.
He's around here somewhere.
Cute. Okay. Which do you like better, beaches or mountains?
Holy cow. I think beaches. We got married in Maui and we've been back multiple times. We were just there in December. So I probably have to say, I mean, I love living in Vancouver for the mountains. I've snowboarded since I was in my early 20s. So I do like snowboarding, but I think I'd have to say beach.
Well, that's the nice thing about being in Vancouver. You can like do it all.
We actually live in a beach community. It's about a 4 minute walk to the beach where we live. And then about, you know, 45 minute drive to the top of a mountain. So we do have the best of both worlds here in Vancouver.
Very good. All right. What is your favorite holiday to celebrate?
My birthday? what's my favorite holiday? That's a good question.
It could be a birthday. It's a valid question, answer.
You know what? I was a bit of a bah humbugger for a while. I really appreciated Christmas as a kid. And then in my, you know, 20s and 30s, I started to like sour on Christmas. I just felt there was a whole lot of pressure on Christmas and, you know, everything shut down. And I love turkey dinner. It's one of my favorite meals. But now that I have kids again, it's definitely rekindled my joy for Christmas. Like just that innocence of joy that they have on their faces, you know, and I don't think either of them has really figured out the whole Santa thing yet. I think my son's becoming a little bit skeptical, but they still have that magic of Christmas in their eyes. And so that's definitely, I think, altered my viewpoint of it. And I definitely have re-embraced Christmas.
It is true that Christmas is so much more fun when you have kids in your life. It's just way better. But I always figure it must be a little bit hard since you spend all year making these Christmas movies to then like celebrate Christmas.
Yes.
I think that would be tough.
It is. But you know what it is? I think the last couple of years, I go, as long as my wife and I said, we don't give gifts anymore. We give stockings. And we have this little, my wife found this little cheat sheet. And it's like, you basically fill your partner's stockings with like, you know, something you can wear, something that makes you smell good, something that tastes good, something that makes you laugh, something that you can read. And I found that to be really, it's super creative. And so, you know, it's not about spending a whole bunch of money. It's about finding these little things that aren't, you know, that have a little bit of meaning behind them, you know, and surprising your partner with it. So I found that to be, has been really great in making the shopping process a bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, that's a great idea. All right. Last question. What is your favorite Hallmark or romantic movie?
I don't know what it would be. I definitely like, I think that the one I did, Welcome to Christmas, I really enjoyed that one. It's going to escape me who the female lead was on that, but that's the one with Eric Mabius. And I just, there was just something about filming that. And I mean, it was a really, I kind of liked how it wrapped up at the end, and, you know, and the supporting cast was really wonderful. The director was really wonderful. We got to shoot up in the Canadian Rockies for part of it, which was super great. And so it had a very authentic feel to it. And
Jennifer Finnegan. I was like pretty sure, but I'm like, I'll look it up just to make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that one. That was one that I liked. And I don't like watching myself. I'm one of these actors that doesn't watch everything they do. But that was one that I watched. And I really, really liked it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a Christmas classic that you always you watch every year?
My wife tends to be a little bit more nostalgic and romantic than I am, and so we typically watch It's a Wonderful Life, Home Alone, and Love Actually every year. Like that's just sort of a staple that we watch all three of those movies every year.
It's a good trilogy. It's a good trilogy to watch.
I really love A Wonderful Life. I think Jimmy Stewart, and in talking to Chris Blaha, you know, he was modeling his character in Small Town Christmas after Jimmy Stewart, you know, and there's just an earnestness and a real, like, you just believed him, you know, in what Jimmy Stewart does in those old films, you know, like, that's definitely something that I've always appreciated.
I mean, that movie is just so meaningful, and like some people will say, oh, it's so over the top when, you know, everything is like a complete disaster when hasn't been born, but like of course it is, because the angel is trying to get him to stop from killing himself. They're not going to go subtle on this. Like if he went to the alternate dimension and like nothing had changed, that wouldn't work.
You know, I just feel like I've had a bit of loss in my life, and I definitely connect with that sense of, even if you don't realize it, you're affecting a lot of people's lives in more ways than you know.
Yeah.
And to remember that, you know what I mean? Just, you know, when you're having a down day, you know, just the fact that you have an opportunity to exist for another day on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, if you can, you know, keep that in mind, like, you know, it's hard. I know a lot of people struggle with mental depression and things like that, but it's like, you know, I've tried to always take every day as a gift and, you know, to really embrace it.
Well, and I just love at the end when he's like, Merry Christmas, movie house.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. So good.
Yeah, so good.
Well, very good. You answered all the questions. So thank you so much for coming on talk with us. We really appreciate it. It was so fun to get to meet you. And do you have social media or anything like that you want to share?
I do. I'm not super active on social media, but I have Twitter and I have Instagram. If you look up Daniel Bacon, I'm basically both on those two. Yeah, I find that it sucks me in and I go down a weird little hole with it. So, you know, my kids mean a lot to me. So I spend, that's the great thing about my job is that I get to spend a lot of time with my kids. You know, I teach a couple of days a week, but so when I'm not on set, it's always time with them. So I tend to turn that off and hang out with my kids. So
I think that's the good choice.
Yeah. And I don't want them to get sucked into it. So I think that, you know, I try to avoid getting on my phone too much so that, you know, they don't see that and try to replicate that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, very good. Well, thank you again. And we'll look forward to seeing the new movie. It's going to be fun.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
We'd like to thank Daniel for coming on the podcast. This was so much fun to get to talk with him. Your comments in the comment section or on Twitter. Love to hear your thoughts. And please follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. Check that out. Also, make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmarkies Pod, Hallmarkies Podcast, all of our social media. And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. That really helps us a lot. And if you are watching on YouTube, please give the video a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. We appreciate that so much. We also have a patron group and merch store. So please take a look at that. We got some fun patron watch alongs coming up. So I mean, please take a look at the patron group. It is definitely well worth your money. So we really appreciate that support. And thanks again to Daniel, and we'll talk to y'all later. Bye.